Welcome to Wozcast 14. This is my 14th podcast on teaching and learning, and this one's talking a little bit about the VITA conference I attended earlier this month. My name is Warwick Wynne, and the VITA conference is the Victorian Information Technology Teachers Association. I went to their Wednesday session for principals and ICT leaders, subtitled Imagination, Creativity and Thinking at Flemington Racecourse on the 22nd of November. So I'd like to talk about a few of those sessions I attended and just reflect on some of them while they're still fresh in my mind. And I know it's been a little while since I did a podcast, and so I'm always anxious to keep the skills, as I laughingly refer to them, up to scratch. A couple of websites to note before I begin. You might want to follow these show notes online. My edu blog is simply Warwick, warwick.edublogs.org, and you can find show notes for all the podcasts there. But also a new site I've been mucking around with for hosting these podcasts, which is at Podomatic, and the URL for that site is teachingandlearning.podomatic.com, and that's where I'm storing these Wozcasts currently. I put the last three or four up there already, so you can access the most recent ones if you are so inclined. But the main website is the EduBlogs one at warwick.eduBlogs.org. So, talking about the VITA conference and what was going on this year, as I said, I was at the principal and ICT leaders session or stream, which was a one-day stream of a three-day conference. And it was interesting. I'd say the breakfast was better. Breakfast was definitely better. But I'm not sure about the actual contents of the conference this year. And I missed, I think, the practical nature of some of the sessions I went to last year, where they were very hands-on, very teacher-centered, very classroom-centered, and where practitioners were taking the audience through how-tos and what I've been doing, things like Moodle, things like blogging, things like podcasting were all up there last year. Obviously, the principals and ICT leaders' strand is not about that hands-on kind of thing, but I did miss it a bit, I must say, in the sessions I attended. So let's talk about the first session, which was the breakfast session, New Learning for Creative School Environments by Apple Computer, talking about their work at Heathmont College. Now, I blogged about this a bit earlier in the year when we saw in the Age running a big feature about what they were doing with laptop computers at Heathmont, where they basically have given Heathmont College 6 Apple laptops and 30 iPods and access to a online learning platform called StudyWiz, and seeing what the kids come up with. They were really selling this as a natural and a kind of a normal secondary college being given state-of-the-art tools, and talking about what the kids and the teachers were doing at them. Pretty impressive. It was, you know, I must say, I was a bit more impressed than when I read about it early in the year in the paper, where it sounded like, you know, wow, kids have laptops and are learning. You know, like, this is news. But yeah, I thought that the way they were working with audio, the way they were getting the kids to collaborate, the way that StudyWiz was shown as being able to sync with iPods was pretty interesting and powerful. And I thought it was pretty student-centered kind of approach. they were saying that the first wave of podcasts in schools was, you know, VCE revision kind of stuff, which I've seen and have done a bit of, whereas they thought that the most important, and I agree with this, the most important implementation of technologies like podcasting are going to be in the 7 to 10 area. They're going to be in around around real collaborative learning classrooms. StudyWiz 2 is a bit of interesting to me. I hadn't seen that before. A guy called Jeff Elwood was talking about StudyWiz and showing us what it looked like. I mean, there's no end to the online learning platforms that are around about the place now. Blackboard were there in a, with a big stand at the conference, and I've used a thing called Educate, and we saw Moodle being demoed last year, and there are other online learning tools too. WebCT springs to mind. I did like some of the little features of StudyWiz, including, as I mentioned, the way it synchronizes to the iPod as well. And I liked the idea of the probably the more flexible nature of the kind of platform it was building. They talked about building ad hoc collaborative workspaces and talked about things like freeform galleries. This is certainly different from the very early days of what Blackboard and WebCT were showing us as an online learning platform, which was, of course, a way of pushing out content. And so certainly online learning platforms are beginning to realize that teaching and learning isn't about pushing out content anymore, if it ever was. Also talked to a guy called Mike Wazirpi, I think it was, Wazirpi, from Learning Edge in Hobart. Talked about Aquella, which is a content management system, including audio, again the podcasting thing, which is now being used in something like 1,280 schools, he said, including 200 in Tasmania. So Aquella, which I think back ends onto StudyWiz, was also talking, was a point of interest in that discussion. Thought it was, yeah, thought it was a pretty interesting discussion. And I think what I took back to my school out of that was certainly StudyWiz, and where that and what that might look like, because they are getting smarter, they're getting more attractive and more graphical. These are new school-based, K-12 based online platforms. Should mention before that, over breakfast, there was a talk from Census, a guy from Census called Stephen Ronchi, who talked about safe and secure searching for schools. It was kind of rather low-end, isn't probably what I mean. It was rather, I suppose it wasn't what they wanted to do. Originally, I think when they planned this agenda, they were going to launch their new site, sensei.com.au, which is going to be a new Telstra spin-off learning and teaching site, but it wasn't ready. So he took us through Census, which is an Australian search engine, which delivers relevant Australian results and safe and secure searching. So I'm not sure if that was tremendously exciting or not. I'd like to see some of these search engines for students building the more complex search criteria up the front rather than hiding it, like we know that Google has been accused of hiding its advanced search capacity. And certainly kids need to know how to use those. Wayne Crane from the government sector also talked about government schools. They're developing an ultranet, which I thought was pretty interesting, because again, here's you know, what is our online learning presence going to be, and this ultranet was going to be delivered to all schools. It's always worrying when you deliver things to all schools, but there's plenty of chance to get that right. I think he talked about content collaboration and personalisation. Certainly can't disagree with that as a name. And a couple of the government school teachers I was talking to in the around the breakfast table had heard of this ultranet coming out, and so obviously it's a bit of a push happening around that. Around that sector, and it'll be really interesting to see what they come up with. Little flashlight, though, again, a little flashing light. I heard government school sectors talking about origami-like devices for students. And I've heard this before from a couple of, not from Stephen, it's not from Wayne Crane, but from another government school leader talking about small devices, handheld devices being the future. And I guess that's partly financial. He was arguing that for $60 million a year, you could roll out a device for every student in the government sector. And partly about, you know, portability and those kind of things too. But I must say that I'm not convinced of handheld devices being the answer, or of PDA-like devices being the answer, or of origami devices being the answer for students in terms of one-on-one computing power. I think you need to be able to enter data into a machine you can actually read the data from as well. So I'm talking keyboard and or slate for decent entry. Otherwise, you're always going to be a bit limited. Look, but it was interesting, and just made me pop up my ears and think, yeah, they're really into that at the moment. Sandy Phillips from the Victorian Education Channel talked about what they're doing with their acceptable use policy and working with schools. The thing I got out of this, the idea I got out of this was, I think was interesting, was when she talked about the student acceptable use policy in schools, and we've all got them, let's face it, we've all got these policies that kids sign up to when they log on to the internet. But she said, does your policy cover contributions to the net and the privacy of others? I mean, do you actually specify that as something that you want covered in your policy? I was in a small working group at my school today talking about online safety and ethics, and this came up as an issue, again, something we want to talk about in terms of digital footprint, but also cyberbullying and protecting the rights of others. Had a bit of a talk. Dr. Kath Jordan talked a bit about search engines again, and we were into the rest of the day. I also heard about going back to the Heathmont experience, the worst word I've heard for a long time, which was iPodagogy. So this is to do with the learning, not pedagogy, but iPodagogy, which is the learning which comes associated with iPods and embedding innovative practice. Yep. So we're never going to use that word again. It was, not good. So moving on to the day, next station I went to was really looking at, we had a bit of next session was to do with Learning Federation tools. Now, I've been to a couple of sessions on Learning Federation, and I've been endlessly frustrated by the our inability to access these items in any really sustained way up till now, although it's slowly changing in independent schools. But Martin Stone from the Curriculum Corporation presentation called 2.5 gigabytes and counting, the Learning Federation digital content pool. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, I thought I'd heard it all about this stuff, and I remember talking and maybe even blogging about how I thought that the learning objects weren't that fantastic, and maybe it was more about the actual items that they'd put up there. I mean, that was one of the things I thought that was interesting, that there's two kinds of things that the Learning Federation has put up. Whole-scale activities, and then just simple objects like a poem or a photograph or a short video. And I always thought that maybe the smaller ones, the digital resources, they call them, 2,500 of them up there, were they probably the most useful because they're most flexible. And I kind of did argue that teachers can do what they want to do with it rather than being constrained to these activities which, you know, someone else had invented for you. But there are 1,500 learning objects, and he took us through them, and he took us through some of the principles behind them again, their self-paced nature, the desire that they're about predicting and testing, and scaffolding the learning, and again, importantly too, I thought about not trying to be cool but simply giving good play and good gameplay and good clear resources. And I thought, yeah, there probably is that kind of value in these. I thought $55 million. He said there's $55 million worth of free material on a DVD, which you can take home to your school, which is the amount of money that's been put into the learning objects. And I thought, yeah, that is something valuable. That is something very worthwhile that we should be doing more with. So I'm willing to maybe talk them up a little bit more than I was, and maybe now that we can actually get our hands on them, because that's been, for me, the big hassle, trying to get our hands on these things, these learning objects, which have been shown for about at least 3 years. We had an interesting presentation from a learning evangelist. He called himself a internet evangelist, I think he said. He's from Microsoft. His name was David Lempers, and he called himself an evangelist who was out there pushing the envelope for us. He was mainly working with business. He admitted that, and his links to education weren't strong. And he was pretty cool. You know, he was very cool. For example, all his PowerPoint presentation slides had graffiti kind of background, you know, like little tagged walls and things. And he was a developer, and he told us when he was listening to Triple J the other day, he found this, and he was very kind of very cool. And he was really urging teachers to go with it, to run with it, to prepare the students for the kind of world that they're going to have in business, which was, you know, as we know, we've heard this all before, but it was interesting to have that same message from someone who was in business rather than someone who was in education pretending to know. So be a teacher, not a skiller. Let go, he said, and let the kids go. So I thought that was good. He talked about TechCrunch and Technorati and the podcast network work. He gave a good quote. He said, leverage your best resource, and the best resource is your students. So he was kind of like, yeah, like I thought it was interesting, it was lively, it was a bit out there, a bit different, and probably for some principals and leaders would have been maybe even a bit edgy and kind of racy in its way it was presented. So that was pretty good. I thought that was okay, although it wasn't connected to learning in a strong way, really. So that was the called Next Generation ICT, and again, it's just nice to hear some of these messages being reaffirmed for us in you know, ways that we probably haven't heard, or in contexts we haven't heard. The final session I went to before I had to go back to work and go to another meeting was by Ian Wells from the Australian Computer Society, who was talking about broadband and his classic grumpy computer guy who, you know, was arguing, in essence, that what we have in Australia isn't broadband at all. He called it snail band or fraud band, and talked about what genuine broadband was, which apparently most computer people define as over 10 megabits per second. And he talked about the average speeds in a lot of countries other than Australia. In the UK, 13 megabits. France, around 8. Canada, about 6.8. The US, 3.3. And then Australia, under 1. That's pretty much what I'm working on is about 512, I think, download speed. So, yeah, he was just talking about the frustrations, I suppose, of business and perhaps education too when it comes to that. When we're moving to these new technologies, in having a broadband system which was so slow, and of course we shouldn't forget that large sections of our community haven't got anything like that at all, in country and regional areas. So yeah, it was just kind of like a bit of a wake up call, I suppose. He wasn't being political. He was just saying that he thought we should know that what we had was nothing like broadband. So that were the conference presentations I went to. They were, again, a mixed bag, kind of affirming you know, kind of not. I suppose StudyWiz, I certainly want to take a good look at that. I thought that I really reassessed what I thought about Heathmont and their experiment, I suppose. They're pretty happy to call it that themselves. They were doing it as a research project to see what the learning could come out of it. Very impressed with a guy called Michael Regan, a first-year PE teacher at Heathmont, who presented on his podcast he'd been working with. He talks about podcasts for learning and of learning and as learning, which I thought was pretty good. And, you know, for a first-year teacher to be kind of getting into it, I thought that was terrific. And you'd expect it, maybe, you know, first-year teacher, young, techo, kind of, you know, digital native, maybe, you'd expect it. But, you know, we all know that first-year is not about that. It's about survival. And for a first-year teacher to be into that and surviving is great. Heathmont also talked about staff learning circles and as their staff officers, and the way they structured the project was the deputy principal, I think Michael Fitzgerald, talked about the structure of the project, which I thought was really interesting from a project management point of view. For those of us who are trying to roll out projects and professional development and innovation, he talked about getting volunteers, getting staff to train the trainer. The idea of the learning circle of staff. He talked about effective teamwork, and he talked at the importance of projects like this having an endpoint. He thought that, you know, the project had a starting point and an endpoint, and that was good. It wasn't ongoing forever, so people could put their energy into it for a time that was not, you know, a project that was going to be lasting forever. That was interesting. And he talked about the importance of student engagement in all the aims of the iPod work they'd been doing. So that was, they were the highlights of the conference for me, which is probably, as I said at the start, a little less hands-on than I would like to see. But that's what you get when you go to to that big picture or leadership stream. You miss out on the nitty-gritty stuff, which is the fun stuff. So I might kind of stop there. It's a bit shorter than my usual WAScast. I usually try to go for about half an hour and talk about technology and learning. But I just thought I'd focus this one on the VITA conference pretty much straight through, and really to recollect my own thoughts and get them in shape, as well as much as sharing it with all you guys out there who are trying to think about this stuff. So I will leave you with a little techo tip, which I picked up in the last month, couple of months. Great program called Launchy, which I've been using every day. And everyone at school I talk to is absolutely sick and tired of me talking about this. All it is a tiny little program which you use for Windows to launch applications. It's an open source keystroke launcher for Windows. I think it was Charles Wright from The Age who talked about it in one of his articles in The Green Guide a few months ago. I tried it. It's a free Windows utility designed to help you forget your start menu and the icons, etc. So my desktop looks clean and uncluttered. The nice thing about it, you just simply press Alt Spacebar, start typing the first few letters of the application you want to launch, and it pops up, and it seems to remember the ones you've been using most. So if you've been in Word or FileMaker or Excel, you type E and Excel will be there, and you just hit Enter and it launches Excel. But more than that, you can actually also get it to launch documents or project files or folders or bookmarks. You can actually specify what you want to launch, even a folder you want it to look at and remember. So, for example, if you've got documents you've been working on in a particular folder, say curriculum folder or a technology folder, you can ask Launchy to keep an eye on that folder. So when you start typing a document name, a list of documents with that name